And we are back, Stripe Show Podcast. Another week, another edition. Florida Swing is here. And how about that? A guy from the Pacific Northwest wins on the PGA Tour. My man, Joe Highsmith. You know I'm all in on my guys from the Pacific Northwest winning. And he just went lights out on the weekend. So I'm super excited here this week to come on here and talk some golf. Weather is perfect here in Ponte Vedra Beach, Florida. Of course, next week's the Players' Championship about 5 miles down the road. So I'm excited about that. As you know, we'll have an in-studio series next week. And so we are hitting the ground running here in the month of March. This week, to kick us off, one of the top teachers, Golf Digest Top 50, joins me today. Erica Larkin, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much, Travis. Thanks for having me.
Well, I appreciate you joining us. I know you're busy, and you're bringing this true swing that I know has been a passion of yours. And you know, started years ago with a book back in 2017, and now this true swing has even taken the next step with a full curriculum that I know you're training amateurs all over the world, but also you're starting to train teachers on it as well.
That's right. Yes, taking things to the next level. I've gotten a lot of great feedback over the years from not only individual students, but events and golf schools that I've been running. And to scale that further geographically and digitally too, just was going to require some more bodies and coaches to help me do this, which is exciting. I'm excited for that next step in my journey as a coach to teach the teachers and mentor others and help them elevate their careers through what I believe is going to be hopefully a leading brand in golf instruction. What we're doing is speaking to the average golfer in simple terms. And I think the curriculums and the lesson plans that we're using for events, but also in person for private instruction and online instruction for our online academy, all will have that common thread and theme, which is about finding your true swing, unlocking your body, unlocking your better golf that already what we believe lives inside of you.
Yeah. Unlock is a key word. About the true swing. And you can check this out. We're going to get into this in today's podcast, but you can go to the website here to start with ericalarkingolf.com, but also trueswing.com. And please follow Erica. She's got a huge following on Instagram at Erica Larkin Golf. So before we get to this first video about the true swing, you know, I just love the idea that, you know, you need more teachers to help spread your word, right? And it's, and before we came on, we were talking about, you know, building that brand, building something that can expand and help people just beyond that individual lesson, right, that you're standing there and working on someone with. And that was one of the reasons I built the studio and have another studio coming, is to expand that footprint where you feel like your message has value and you just want more people to hear it. Right. And play better golf. And I think it's brilliant because the amateur game, Erica, is doing so good. I mean, you and I have been doing this a long time, and to see so many people playing and enjoying the game, I think your timing is perfect.
Thank you. Yeah. Social media is a big component of the growth that I've had and getting my message out there in a way where the information is accessible and bite size, and you know, launching some digital products that are a little bit more extensive and, you know, people can dig into the information is nice, because remotely then, even if they can't make it to Virginia in person, they've been able to get a taste of what I'm about at a little deeper level. It kind of brings the book to life. Mm-hmm. And so my True Swing program and the Pendulum Swing Sequence, which has been available now online in a few different places, including Performance Golf, has been a really great success. And it's built this foundation of an audience that you know, starts to tell their friends and they're seeing results. And I get these incredible testimonials from people I've never even worked with in person. That's when you, I guess, as a coach, you feel like, okay, what I'm doing is good. What I'm doing is working, because if it can help somebody that I've never physically taught in person, it must be resonating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's well said. All right. Let's get into this first video. All right. And okay. This is straight off of your Instagram page. So for those that are with us watching, you will see this video, of course, on YouTube. And then for those that are listening along, we appreciate you all. We love you all. You'll be hearing this. So we'll articulate a lot of these videos that we are looking at, but check this out first.
Next time you play, instead of technical swing thoughts, positions, and parts, how about just swing with balance? Swing like a pendulum. Swing with confidence. Swing with effortless power. Swing from the ground up. Swing without limits. Swing like nobody's watching. Swing without tension. But swing with momentum. Swing to your target. Swing with freedom. Swing with joy. And most importantly, swing your true swing. The days you truly surrender to your swing is when you're going to play your best golf. Join us and unlock your true potential.
So when you watch and listen to that, like, what's the first thing that comes to your mind to share with the audience?
The first thing that comes to my mind is to get them out of their head and into their swing, their free swing, their natural motion. I think that golfers get really caught up in the million tips that are available online. They sometimes go and get lessons, they get bogged down with mechanical thoughts. And so trying to get to this place where they have a wholeness of motion, a connection with awareness of their swing, but at the same time, not being overly conscious of just the ball or just their elbow or just their wrist, like the experience of swinging, the joyful feeling that should be, as opposed to something that's filled with tension, filled with manipulation and overthinking. So trying to simplify it down to, hey, if we make a true swinging motion, good things are going to happen. You'll feel freer. Your motion will be more athletic, more balanced, and you'll make better contact with the ball. You'll have more fun doing it.
So for someone who's listening and they're like, okay, what's the first step, the second step that would take someone, you know, along that journey?
The first step is really understanding that the golf swing is basically a giant pendulum swing, and we're trying to create pendulum motion that's free of manipulation. Manipulation is what you would directly create with your hands, arms, wrists. That's inefficient. To me, it's about the body moving to get the arm club unit into motion. That's the swing. The club was built for swinging, and I know it's kind of maybe a little bit specific, but we are swinging to hit a ball. We're not hitting at a ball to hit a ball. The club was built for swinging. And so we have to remember that our job as the golfers to create that kind of action, that kind of body language. But we watch golfers chopping, scooping, hitting at, you know, constantly. And they just look like an octopus falling out of a tree, not coordinated, not efficient, and just exhausted by the end of 18 holes. It doesn't have to be that way. Good golf is efficient, and it's a long round out there, 18 holes, 4 or 5 hours. Like, can we move in a way that is natural to our body, where we're not inviting pain or injury, and we do so where it feels efficient and effortless? That's what I want people to experience. Golfers are working way too hard, way too much input for way too little output.
Well, there's plenty to read. There's plenty to look at when it comes to tips, when it comes to ideas. And look, and most all of it, 99% of it, is coming from a good place. But it can hurt and be detrimental, as you know, to many. Not all, but many. But it is the easiest way, I think, for, let's just say, an amateur golfer, male or female, who likes the game, knows that they have opportunity for improvement. There's many things that they don't like about their ball flight or the way they hit a particular short game shot or their putting. I mean, you know, there's areas that they don't like. And so they recognize that and they're like, well, gosh, I want to get better. And just the notion of a new idea comes across, right? And they see it on Instagram, or they read it in Golf Digest, or they listen to it on the whatever. And they're like, oh, and in some ways it's almost like hope, right? And so they go down that path, and then, okay, well, now I'm still in the same spot. Okay. And then there's another idea. And eventually, for most, I think that it runs its course. And they either just give up on the idea and they're just, I am who I am, or they do take the next step, which is to get in a lesson or to get into a true swing program. And so where I'm going with this is this person shows up, whether it's, you know, online or in person in Virginia, and they're a 12 handicap and they're explaining to you that I hit behind it with my irons from time to time and I hit my driver, it tends to go to the right, you know, all these things that we hear on a daily basis. And so as you're listening to that and you're assessing for the first time, what does that look like in for you? Like, is there technology involved, or is it just an assessment of watching that person and how they move?
Yeah, I'm always going to ask them, you know, if there's physical limitations going on, something I should be aware of that would impact their movement. You know, they're babying a shoulder or a sore back, or they just got over a knee replacement or something that's going on. I want to know that. Beyond that, I want to know what's in their head. I want to know what they've been trying to do, what they've been told maybe most recently, or if there's a pattern that they've been working away from, maybe some change, big change they were trying to make, again, in the recent past of, you know, I've been trying to work on my grip or whatever they're up to lately, because that helps me understand where they're coming from and how they're viewing the swing and where their focus has been. Maybe it's been a backswing thing, or maybe they're trying to fix a chicken wing, but on not realizing where the problem really begins. And so trying to understand where they are with their own golf IQ, the words they're using, the vernacular they're using, are they correct in what they're even trying to say? So when I see them give me those first sample swings, warm-up swings, and I say, hey, hit a few wedges and seven irons and maybe hit a couple drivers, I'm looking for their general pattern, but I'm looking at body language. Where is their manipulation really starting in their swing, and how does that manifest? Because it's a domino effect. Are they really swinging the club? Are they moving with good tempo? Do they have good balance, dynamic balance, setup balance? What's their framework for swinging looking like? Do they have a chance to be swinging the club manipulation free, or are they on the hook to compensate before they even begin because of those things that are going on before they even move? Again, setup geometry, terrible balance. Maybe again, their tempo is just way out of whack. And so I'm looking at their golf swing through this lens to try and basically diagnose how they're moving based on what I call like five principles of a true swing, which comes back to these five things: tempo, flow, which is the sequence of motion, freedom. Are they actually swinging freely, or are they really bound up with tension, quickness, shortness? Where's that? What's happening in their swing? Are they not able to move freely because of the other two? I'm trying to see if they're using energy well. Are they really utilizing momentum, or are they just muscling the ball? What's going on there? That kind of also affects that sense of freedom, right? And then just understanding, are they truly moving with balance from start to finish? So we have tempo, flow, freedom, energy, and balance. Are they using their body, their engine, in a way that's being efficient? And if I can break it down into one of those five key areas, or at least prioritize which principles they're succeeding in and which ones need some attention, it can explain immediately why they're having the issues with their swing faults and ball flight faults that they're struggling with, their ball flight patterns. So I know we're gonna talk a little bit more about this, but that's how I'm viewing golf swings, is through these five categories.
Let's get into the first one. Okay, I want to play this swing here, and then we'll explain it to those that are just listening. All right, so here is. All right, so when we look at that, and if you had to articulate that to those that are just listening, like what did we just see there?
So I saw a guy that moved with what I would say is pretty good balance and tempo, and his flow was pretty good. When you think of the overall sequence of movement, he had a nice even rhythm. He was trying to be relaxed in his motion. He finished in balance, both from setup, but also at the end of his swing, he wasn't falling out of it. What you would see in his setup is you would see a very strong right-hand grip. And what's also noticeable in the follow-through is a lot of chicken wing type motion, some manipulation happening through impact clearly. So we have to say, what's going on? Where's that? What's breaking down here? And by the way, what was his ball flight, which you can't see on the video, but He had some pretty low kind of snappy hook type shots for sure that he was managing. And then he also had some pushes. So here's a guy that was swinging neutral to a little in to out on his swing. I have TrackMan running in that bay, so I did have his numbers there. And his path was checking out 1, 2, 3 degrees in to out. Like, it wasn't crazy off in his swing plane or swing path geometry. His space was a little less consistent. It was somewhere between square and close, but there were some random open ones too. And the reason is because the whole time he's swinging, he's blocking a hook with that grip position. So in his efforts to manage the club face, he ended up having to steer the face through impact and to hold off the face from releasing. He ended up with a ton of shaft lean, which was causing him thin shots, low shots, unfortunately. So like, his ball flight was certainly directly affected by the impact conditions. The impact conditions were directly affected by his club face control. So in this case, the golfer got great marks for tempo, and overall his flow had potential. He had a long backswing, which we could argue is a little bit out of balance. Like, if you were to freeze frame him at the top, maybe again, he starts to get a little long for his own good, but I think it was recoverable. So we really took a hard look at his grip to try to get a little bit more club face orientation that made sense. That would give way to him having the freedom to release the club through impact better.
Yeah.
One other unfortunate, you know, part of that swing is in the downswing, to make up for the fact that, again, he had to manage his club face. And at setup, the grip being so strong with the right hand, he was tilted. Right shoulder was way low at setup. And then same thing coming back to impact. He had a lot of right side bend that developed in his swing because of the grip. So his alignments at setup, his balance at setup, even though he's physically balanced, his alignments were out of balance. And that was causing this chain reaction of now manipulation throughout his swing. So that's how I looked at this golfer. Is he had some really positive things about his movement pattern. Like, he looked athletic, but the alignments were out of whack. So we had to go back to sort of those basic concepts of get your grip neutral. Let's get that shoulder plane level so that at impact, you have a chance to be level. You have a chance to be dynamically balanced over the ball, and you don't have to make up for what's going to be a closed face unless you do something about it.
So the freedom in that swing had to be manipulated because of the club face. And let's talk about the grip for a minute, because I think the left-hand grip for a right-handed player probably dominates most of the conversation. And we hear the terms weak, neutral, strong. Just in simple terms for our audience, strong would be the more your hands are rotated to the right. And that applies to both hands. And I think the left hand, the glove hand, you know, getting it a little bit stronger, you know, the thumb down the right-hand side, and is probably a little more discussed. I find, Erica, the hand that's usually the more difficult one to fix when it gets radically out of position is the trail hand. And in this situation, as you were mentioning, his right hand was so far underneath the grip. And I find that, you know, a lot of these men in particular, they'll grip it, you know, really down in the base of their fingers, and they'll get way underneath, and it indeed feels stronger, right? It gives them more leverage. But the downside to that, as Erica mentioned, is the face gets too closed. And so you hit enough balls, you sense that. And so you start fighting that off at the bottom, and then all of a sudden you're blocking it. And just by getting that grip, maybe a little more, you know, try to do this here, a little more, you know, diagonal and a little more down in the tips towards the tips of the fingers of the right hand. Now you can get that right hand on a little more on top and covering it. And then all of a sudden now the face, as you mentioned, is a bit more neutral. So the freedom there was struggling. And I would imagine there's, just kind of staying on the freedom for a second, the freedom aspect of this and the manipulation through impact, there are a lot of things that can break down, you know, for a golfer, where we'll see things happen at impact and post-impact because of what happened before. And this is just one example, but there's many.
Yeah, his follow through and the breakdowns that were happening with chicken wing and a scooped right hand and him having ball flight control issues, trajectory issues, that was his current solution to, unfortunately, what was happening before that. It started at setup. So A number one, there was definitely a grip adjustment. Do I do that with every golfer? It depends. It depends on what's happening with ball flight and how they're managing it. But, you know, because he checked some of the other boxes of those five principles, and freedom was one that was definitely not there through impact. He did not have a free release. I had to attack the grip to help him get to a point where he could create better geometry at impact. It was funny because his TrackMan numbers were like, he was like negative 7 or 8 on his angle of attack. That's how much shaft lean he had at impact. And his low point was like 3-4 inches in front of the ball. And you would say, all right, that might be okay. But he was hitting these thin, low screamers because effectively he was hitting so much down on the ball with the shaft lean. But where was his body language? It was actually backwards. So it was like, you know, not in balance. You have a body language that looks like he's hitting up on the ball. But to have any chance to make contact, he ended up having to drag the club through impact to not hit behind it.
Right.
Because his trail side was so low. So it's like, you know, these layers of compensation that people get into, all you could really go back and just blame the whole thing on his right hand grip. Had him do a little kind of flow exercise back and forth, and then like a shuffle drill into the ball just to get him staying more level so he would stop tilting too much. That was his old habit that he built around that grip. So just kind of like continuous swinging, feeling his body pivot and stay level, and then working his way up to like just hit a ball. We did that a little bit. We hit some punch shots on his left side to get him a little bit more covering the ball and getting him more comfortable at impact, being more left with his upper body because he was so used to being like behind it. And once he did that, we saw the numbers start to change. His angle of attack leveled out a little bit, even for irons. You know, we want to hit down, but we don't want to hit so much down. And we want the shaft to be leaning forward, but not so much leaning forward, because there's a point of diminishing returns on that stuff. And he was there. He was at it.
So let's watch this here. This is what Erica was talking about here. You'll see this kind of this swing back and forth, a little flow here.
That's it. Yeah,
so you can see him a little more on top of it, covering it better, and now he can release it. It's always funny where you could film a swing, and you could sit down and show it to him in their numbers, and a player can have multiple things that you're looking at address backswing issues that then lead to downswing and impact compensations. And the first thing that they'll say and they'll see is, look at my chicken wing, right? And where the teacher comes in is, you're not fixing that chicken wing until we get you more organized at address and going back perhaps, and then therefore better coming down. And now those things start to, you know, work themselves out. And the order of the madness, and just like you talked about there, is brilliant, because that's really how you give that player freedom to play better golf.
Yeah, one little part of the story too, in his interview, he said he was really working hard on trying to bow his wrists at the top. That was like where his focus was. And he also mentioned, though, that he had watched my video series online and he loved the idea. He knotted up like a beach towel, and I do this sort of almost like a rope swing with a towel, like back and forth. And he said he never played better golf than after the day after he first did that towel swing drill. And he just had like one of the best rounds he shot. 82 was his personal best. It was like one of his best scores ever. And he just went out there thinking about that feeling of like the continuous swinging with the towel over his shoulder and back and forth. And I said, well, that probably proved to you that if you worried less about your wrists and just kind of thought about the towel swinging back and forth, you played better. So let's like lean into that and let's get you not thinking about your wrists so much. I said, what if I told you that with this grip change, you never have to think about your wrists again? He was like, that'd be great. I said, because think about it, the strong right hand and the right arm twisted way under, guess what that was doing up here at the top? It was creating another issue. The swing was long because he just couldn't get comfortable at the top. Plus he had this other intention that was really misinformed, to be totally honest.
Let's go. I want to talk about this second item you said in the five principles before we get to the next swing. And that's flow. And you use the word sequence. And as I understand it, and just watching that swing, this guy had good flow. I mean, he looked like he had a little movement to the right and then a little movement back to the left. He had some rotation, and there was a nice sequence to it and flow to it. Talk quickly about the flow aspect and what that means.
Flow is the order of events in your swing. Are you moving efficiently? It's the kinematic sequence is the fancy term, right? It's the body mm-hmm. moving to help then deliver the arms in the right order to create and transfer energy through the swing. So the way I very simply say it is the body leads the arms. And so if I was going to put four words together, it would be pivot swing, or you could say step swing. And that kind of signifies this concept of the body doing something before the arms and the club go back. And then when we reverse it, the body's doing something and then the arms and the club follow. So the body is the leader. We have to do that with balance, because if we get super aggressive with our body and we turn our body before we've stepped over in the downswing, we're out of sequence. Very much, I always do the analogy to a throwing action. We step and throw, but we step, turn, and then throw. So the step happens before the pivot happens before the actual throw. Same in the golf swing. So we want to wind that up and we want to unwind that in that order. We get the order right. We have efficient transfer of energy through our body from the ground up out to the golf club. That makes a golf swing feel easy. But if we energize our swing in the wrong order, we end up muscling it. Now we have to manipulate, because if our lower body, for example, is just turned off and we're not using our legs and we're not creating and transferring energy through our body the right way in that athletic sequence, we're on the hook to create lots of power from a very not so powerful place. And so I think that getting people to move in a good flow, in a good sequence of motion, which is an athletic sequence, a good kinematic sequence, is really important. So that's just the simple terms I've put on it, and getting people to do drills that helps them find that sequence in a way that builds coordination, builds skill, builds athleticism, challenges their balance. That's why that little shuffle drill is so good, as are different walking drills and stepping drills, because they are on the hook to get their footwork matched up to their arm swing correctly to be able to execute a drill like you just saw there.
Yeah. And I think the flow, and I use that word a lot, flow, I use the word momentum a lot. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like there's, and I'm speaking to, as we get older, oftentimes we start losing motion. We just start losing movement. And you have to get people like that, and the next person I'm going to show, and even some people, the people that I come into the studio here, as we get older into the 70s and 80s, we lose movement. And it almost at times, I think, is these swing faults, perhaps, and the lack of freedom, it gets even more condensed, because they don't want to swing bigger because then they fear that the ball will go more offline or whatever, right? So it's almost like we go more in and tighter and less movement to minimize perhaps the destruction that we might see in the ball flight.
Yeah. Yeah, they feel like less is more, and that if they just sort of shut it down, they have more control. But as I like to say, you have to give up control to get control to some degree. But with balance being the underlying key, I think as people age, they don't really, they take for granted how much their balance may be waning. And so unfortunately, as we lose the ability to dynamically balance ourselves because our balance isn't what it used to be, whether that's strength, it could be a lot of reasons. But people don't train balance very, very well. And if you're not staying in the gym, you're definitely not even, you know, sniffing the surface on training balance. But when your balance system is not as good as it used to be, you can't swing bigger or faster because your brain won't allow it. There's this thing called self-preservation, and we don't want to fall over and we don't want to hurt ourselves. So people end up kind of shutting things down because their balance system won't allow them to have the freedom that they want or that they could have otherwise. So I'm a big proponent about, even as, you know, golfers are aging, that's a very high priority item, is that we continue to work on our balance skills. in and out of the gym. There's simple stuff. Single leg balance practice every single day is huge for being able to catch yourself on your left leg as you're trying to shift your weight, making a bigger back swing because you can support yourself on your right side. Yeah. If you can't stand on one foot for 10 seconds, there's no way you're making a bigger golf swing with any kind of control or freedom. So, you know, this is like the fundamental thing that we have to get golfers better at as they age, to have a chance to find the bigger range of motion and the freedom, because they've lost dynamic balance over the years. A lot of them have, not everybody, but a lot have. They don't even realize it.
Yeah. And I think I've made the statement many times that I lengthen more people out than I shorten up. And in particularly the older person that would come in here for these reasons, very reasons that we're talking about. And when you start creating some movement and teaching them how to create a little better flow, oftentimes getting them to move a little to the right before they move to the left starts to create a little bit of that. Now, I'm not talking about a sway. I'm not saying like you want to sway, but just a little, you know, a little momentum, like kind of moves into the right foot, and then, you know, they turn, and then all of a sudden, well, if I know, now I got to move back to the left. And yes. So that little flow is obviously very evident there, but I think a lot of people can learn from that as they get that better flow. And then the third component of, or the third principle of balance, starts to improve. And doing these drills, these balance drills with good flow, just seems like a good marriage together.
Yeah. A lot of golfers, you know, because they get in that safe zone and they just start shutting everything down too, they forget what it's like to use their feet. Let's say, you know, they actually have decent balance. They just haven't been using it because they're just locked in. There's static balance and there's dynamic balance. That's what we want to sort of unlock and get people realizing that use your feet, use your toes, like wake up your feet a little bit more. And sometimes, again, just getting them to get out of their own little comfort zone and moving more, inviting more movement, actually helps them feel that athleticism that they've lost over the years and realizing, oh, wow, that's what it means. Now it makes sense why I haven't been shifting my weight. Now it makes sense why, you know, my drives are not going as far as they once did, because you haven't been using this whole part of your engine. So giving people the permission to move and saying, you can do this, you can do this more and bigger and better. If they can't, then we got to go literally do some balance training over here. But within reason, if they show that they can physically move and still, you know, keep themselves in a safe position, like, let's move our body. Let's remember what it's like to use our feet in particular. They're a huge source of unlocking then the upper part of our body to move bigger and faster.
All right. Before we get to this next student, a little message from our sponsor. If you're like most golfers, you blame yourself when you miss a short putt. So after you hold back the urge to throw your putter in the lake, don't do that. You try to fix your putting stroke. But how long does that last? 1 week, one round, one hole? There's a company called Lab Golf that doesn't think you should be blaming yourself. That's because all putters have this thing called torque, which means the putter face is trying to twist during stroke. So you grip it like a snake. What Lab Golf did is they figure out how to make putters with no torque. They call it lie angle balance. And you have to feel it to believe it. I did. The Lab Golf putter, you don't have to use a funny putting grip to try to keep the face square. You can putt it any way you want because Lab Golf putter stays perfectly square by itself. It's effortless. To see how much easier putting can be, head over to labgolf.com. So there was a time on Saturday, a moment in the tournament last week down in West Palm, that the top seven guys, four of them were using lab putters.
Yeah.
And so I texted Sam, the owner, and I said, how many guys do you have using your putter now? My goodness. We sell so many lab putters. It's unbelievable. And we have them all, you know, in my studio. TruSpec does a great job here. And people come in and they try all kinds of different ones and this and that. And it's a great technology, and man, are they having success? Okay, ready? Here comes the second swing. I'm going to play it twice. All right, so let's do that one more time. All right, so this gentleman, Erica, what are we looking at?
We're looking at a gentleman that's in his 70s, plays a decent amount of golf, and retired Air Force veteran. proud member of the military. He showed up first time I met him, and we did an indoor lesson. It was pretty chilly outside. So, you know, I wasn't sure what I was getting walking into. All I knew is that he was complaining that he felt like he was stuck in his swing. He knew he wasn't making a great weight shift, and he was unhappy with the distance he's getting. That was sort of his three things that he came in walking in with. So I see that as a baseline and immediately notice the posture is very round. He's got his hips tucked under him. He's very out to in on the swing path, coming across the ball a lot. And you could see that the results weren't great. And so I'm keeping in mind, you know, what's realistic with this guy? What can he do? How he's moving? He doesn't look like he's super balanced. So I start asking him questions a little bit about, you know, his background. And he says that he owned several Gold's Gyms over the years, and he was really into weightlifting. And he like was a massive workout guy, like his whole adult life. And so hearing that and then looking at him and seeing his posture, I said, all right, well, this guy has to have better understanding of movement. So we start talking about balance and leverage. And I said, show me what a deadlift posture would look like. So he gets up and he shows me something that looks a lot different than his golf posture. So I asked this guy, you know, what muscles are you engaging when you deadlift? And when you stand before you pick up the bar, how are you bracing yourself to pick up a lot of weight? So he describes how, you know, he would pull shoulder blades back and be ready to pick up this weight. I said, well, you realize that golf's an athletic motion. And at some level we are swinging back this weighted object. I said, if you would never pick up the weight like that, I would never want you to stand like that for this athletic motion either. And so he's like, oh. So I said, if you understand how to engage your upper body and what it means to pull those shoulder blades back together, can we get down into a deadlift position, something similar to that, and then hold our golf club? He said, yeah, I can do that. And he did a lot better when he started to relate to what he already knew and get into an athletic position. His hips started to, his pelvis started to sit better relative to his spine. And the whole thing about his backswing that we were seeing and the over-the-top movement started to get better. Was it perfect? No, because that's a pretty significant pattern that he had. But he couldn't turn well in his backswing. He could never get the club deep enough or far enough back to have a chance to not be over the top because his turn was so limited because his posture was so bad. So for him, he had no freedom of motion. There was no flow to his swing. It was all upper body. He had no lower body helping him. So there was the energy was not there. He was using all just muscle from his upper body to hit the ball. So he was missing quite a few principles if we look at it that way. So the first one being, again, creating a balanced setup, an athletically balanced setup was huge. And then second was using his feet more, activating his feet. Like we did some different drills where I had him show me like marching in place and getting his heels up and down and engaging his toes. And he admitted to me that he has some left side balance issues. And I said, okay, well, that makes sense. So promise me that you're going to work on this a little bit, of course, beyond our lesson, but let's do the best we can to at least get some momentum going for your backswing, making a better turn from a better posture. Now you have a chance to come less over the top. You might still always favor that side. I mean, realistically, the guy's in his 70s, and there's probably, again, some physical limitations there, to be quite frank. But what can we do to at least, you know, somewhat neutralize the pattern and give you a chance to move with a little bit more energy in your body and increase the range of motion that you didn't have to start with? And it did help. His path did change a bit, right? It was still out to in when he left me an hour or so later, but it was better. And so I think you have another video to show a bit of the change of at least his setup and the path starting to look a little better.
Yeah, check this out here. This is, you'll see his posture push back.
Good. Find that chest back position. Roll your shoulders back and then hips back. Yep, better. Good job. Knees touching to a finish. Push all the way through. Just like that step and swing. Push. Good try.
We finally got the club to look like it got more around his body on the backswing. He didn't just lift it into space. So now we're creating an arm connection around the spine. To me, that's the whole thing. We're the center of our circle. We're the center of our pendulum swing. We don't want this disconnected motion if we can help it. If it's, unless it's non-negotiable, you know, let's see if we can connect the arm swing to the body pivot in some capacity that's a little bit better than what he was demonstrating. And I think we accomplished that. He left there with an understanding of movement. He felt the weight shift finally. He felt himself. And in that follow after video, you'll see he actually finished much more off his back foot. I said knees touching together at the end of your swing, just to give him a destination in mind of like how far through I wanted him to finish. And that was hard for him because he didn't have great balance on his left leg to get all the way through confidently. But I think through practice and working on those things, if he was a gym rat in adult life, I said, here's the things I need you to do. Go be a gym rat on your golf swing and work on these three things to truly make a dent in your ability to stand better, and move with some confidence through your impact zone. Otherwise, you're never going to make that weight shift. And you're still going to be all arms. So if you want to solve this, this is how you do it.
Yeah, I want to come back to what you said there here in a second on go be a gym rat on your golf swing, because that gets into practice, right? And doing these things, which we'll get, I want to come back to that. But before that, I want to go back to one of the five principles that you just mentioned there was energy. And I think putting some energy into this swing, and I think it goes to of the audience right now that's sitting there thinking about, gosh, you know, I've lost a lot of distance in the last, you know, 10 years or 5 years, and we get older. And some of that's going to happen. That's just, you know, that's just time, right? I mean, it's going to take over. I'm not going to swing the golf club like I did when I was 21 years old. So Father Time catches up. But so many times, student walks in here, I'm putting energy into that swing. I just had a gentleman the other day, last week, and he called me and he says, you work with some of my friends. I see the improvement and I'm 82 years old and I can't move much anymore. And I'm about ready to give up the game. And I want you to take a look. All right. So he comes in and I looked at his swing and it, you know, Eric, it was typical, you know, he just kind of down in flexion and just kind of swinging the arms, you know, the hips weren't moving, the feet weren't moving. And so sure, some limitations, no doubt, just like you do, you know, where am I, what's the body like, what am I working with here? And so we just started to put some movement, you know, just kind of left, right, left, right. And then, okay, now can turn the hip a little bit, you know, left, right, turn the hip. On the turn the hip. And then pretty soon as he's turning the hips, you know, then it's his shoulders coming across. And I was like, does that hurt? No, I can do that. All right. So a little more movement, a little more turn. And then all of a sudden his spine started to kind of take on a little bit of his extension. And this swing just started climbing and he's swinging through. And it was just amazing to see how much energy started to go into the swing. Some setup, some backswing work, but then of course that would transfer, you know, over to the downswing. And I just think, you know, I'm passionate about this particular one for amateurs as they get older, in keeping them lengthened out and keeping energy into their swing, because I believe those two things, perhaps more than anything, will sustain them playing golf for the rest of their life.
Yes, totally. Couldn't agree more.
So it was fun. Like he walked out the door and I was like, man, I'm proud of myself on that one, because that guy's going to play golf. He walked out of here so excited. And you know, that's why we do what we do, right? Right. There is those particular moments, because look, there's plenty of you out there that give us complete headaches too. Don't get me wrong. Right. We tell you to do something and you go home and you don't do it and you come back and we give you the same lesson. Right. So don't be that person, which is a great segue, Erica, into how, in your expectations as a coach, when you start analyzing these players and they come in and you have your five principles and you're like, okay, we made some changes. Now I need you to go work on these. And my question is, when they work on it, and I struggle with this one myself with students, is I want you to go work on these changes and the concepts that I've identified in your swing, whether it's more freedom, more tempo, whatever it is. But I also want you to be able to play golf, and managing the idea of training, working on some new things, and also playing and helping them through that journey.
Yeah, the hardest thing is taking it to the course. We know that as a coach and as a player, you know, when you have something new you're working on, you really trust it out there. I think step one is you have to prove it to yourself that you're trusting it on the driving range and do that bridge practice or transfer practice where you start making it a little bit more game-like and slow down the amount of reps and change clubs more often and change targets more often and really visualizing holes and shots on the on the range before you get to the golf course. I mean, so that mode of practice, shot making on the driving range and going through your routine, like one ball every 2 or 3 minutes instead of ball, 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 that will be a better test of your ability to recall what you're working on and try to find a way that I always say you have to like come up with your swing mantra, and then that's your swing thought, if you will. But it's a mantra, it's a feel, it's an imagery. What's connecting the dots for you, where in a very simple way you can go up there and maybe say two words to yourself, or think about, I don't know, a wider circle, or think about the pendulum rhythm, or what is it that's going to sort of bring everything together into like one simple nugget that you can bring to the golf course with you and that keeps you on message. Another thing that golfers need to do better of is not abandoning ship when it doesn't work the first time, realizing that, you know, no swing thought's going to work every single time. You can't just then try to find a new one mid round. Just try to stick to what has been working on the range. And if it doesn't work once or twice, give yourself a pass and keep trying, stick with it. If you evaluate post round how things go and you really had low success rate with that mantra, then maybe it's trying to find a new one. But I mean, that's how I would approach it. And homework wise, there's, you know, stuff that you can do on and off the range to help repeat those feelings. Supplemental training, maybe it is in the gym, or just dry practice that you can do at home to just touch the club a little bit every single day while you're going through making a change, so that you can get and expedite the process of getting to that more unconscious place of what the new thing looks like, feels like, so that when you go to the course and you try to bring it to the course, there's less thinking, less conscious remembering, more just, I'm feeling it again. I've been feeling it all week. I've been doing these reps at home. This is the sort of flow or whatever I'm working on. And like, now I need to find that again right before I hit my shot. I'll also say to that in pre-shot routines, I talk a lot about moving into the ball in good time. So not taking too long, right? So there's thinking, there's feeling, and then you got to get up and hit the shot. That is what we do on the driving range. But all of a sudden we get out there and we second guess our alignment and we double check, you know, if we think we even should have chosen the right golf club. And there's that lack of commitment and confidence, even when we're upwards of 2-3 seconds before we've hit the shot, and now we're frozen over the ball. Many good coaches have said this, right? Think over here, take your feel, take your practice swing. And you got about 7-8 seconds to hold on to that feel of whatever you just did in your practice swing to get your butt over the golf ball and hit it before you lose it. So feel it, do it. You know, you can't take so long to get to hitting that golf ball. We want to be athletic. We want to be a little bit reactive almost, and not so overly conscious of every single little moment in motion.
Yeah. At some point you got to take what it is that the coach is trying to get them to do in the new concepts. And there's a clear understanding of that. And you go practice that. And the context is there. And then it's almost like, you know, the self-discovery within that. What does it feel like to you? What does it mean to you? And then build that into the routine and go play golf. And I think you said also, you know, something that, you know, don't abandon it quickly. I think the ones early on that live and die by every shot, I think wear themselves out, you know, if they're, if they're truly trying to improve. And they're truly have invested in someone like you who obviously knows what they're doing, and you're providing a plan and a template for them. But if they live and die by every shot, it's going to wear them out, because golf, we all miss it. I mean, you're always going to miss shots. Always. It's not a pill. It's like you don't, like, I have a headache and all of a sudden now I don't have a headache. It's not like that. It just doesn't, you know, evolve from taking a pill. So I just think that living and dying through this process by every shot, wow, this game will completely wear you out. If you take that approach. I think that's great advice on train and play. That's one that, you know, I think there is a template to follow, but I think everybody is so different, you know, within that and how you want them to go and develop it, and at least be able to come back with some feedback of, you know what, Erica, I worked on my freedom and my balance and these things that you told me to do. And here's my feedback. I love that. When people come back and give me real feedback from the session, wow, that's impactful, because now I can formulate what it is that I'm going to tell you within more of that context and in more of your language of what you're sharing with me.
Correct. And I always tell folks too, to try to maybe potentially add a line item on the scorecard that speaks to, did they really commit to that swing thought on that hole? Or maybe again, overall on if they shot a 90, did they, you know, really truly accomplish what they set out to do with their swing mantra or swing thought? Like, how many times out of 90 did you actually do it? Or are you going to be honest with yourself and say, yeah, you know what, my focus was supposed to be on my balance today, but like 75% of the time I didn't do a great job and I didn't stick with my plan. Well then, okay, now you have some measurable that you can do better on next time, is just literally staying more committed to what it is that you're trying to do, stay more present with it. A lot of people think you go out there and if you practice, you can go out there and not have to think about anything. Yeah, great, maybe months from now, but you have to stay very present with what it is that you're trying to change at first. And even if whether it's mechanical or not, and I try to get people to where it's a bit less mechanical, a little more kinesthetic, more maybe even external thoughts, like that's more my style as a coach, so that it's a little bit easier to transfer onto the golf course. It's really hard to think about, you know, a wrist or an elbow or something out there in the middle of your round. Doesn't mean it can't work, but I find it's a little harder to manage. Mm-hmm. It's distracting. That's
good. Yes. All right. We're going to finish up the show here with something we call Show Us Your Swing. We got time for one video, and this video happens, this individual has a great swing. So let's take a look here.
Sequence, good setup.
Wow. Right.
Yeah. He's right on plane. Arm positions and all that stuff looks good at the top. It looked really neutral. If anything, maybe he just got a little out ahead of it. It looked like he might have blocked it. Like, it just looks like maybe that face is just kind of just a little open coming through. Like, he's just a little late with his release. Very slightly.
Maybe
that's what I see.
Very slightly. Yeah. Maybe a little out in front with the upper body. It'd be good to see a face on view of that. But along those lines, if someone did, you know, lean on it a little bit, get out in front, then the tendency is that player could block it. That face would want to look a little more to the right. They would have to use their hands a little bit more to square it.
To compensate. Yeah. So then it would come back in my eyes. It would come back to, all right, are you actually balanced at impact? For somebody that slides and gets ahead of the ball, and let's say their left knee slides out or their left foot ankle rolls too much too soon, they're not in balance. They're not in a position of leverage for impact. I could basically, you know, hammer in on that one component and let's talk about what actually like dynamic balance at impact looks like and feels like. Stabilizing on that left foot better would prevent the over, you know, too much movement in front of the golf ball for too long. Sometimes sliding is a result of, again, we're not pivoting soon enough. We're laterally moving for too long. So getting into pivot action sooner on the downswing and expediting the sequence of motion so that the pivot happens sooner can also be a fix for somebody that's blocking it or sliding through impact.
Good stuff. Nice swing there. Hey, send us send us your swings. I want to look at more of these moving forward in March. Email it to me, travis@travisfultongolf.com. That is Erica Larkin. You need to follow her on Instagram @ericalarkingolf.com. Website, ericalarkingolf.com. But also check out trueswing.com and learn more about these five principles of tempo, freedom, flow, balance, and energy. Congratulations, Eric, on everything.
Thank you.
Sorry about last week. It's great to have you on this week. Erica, thank you for being here. And
thank
have
you,
a great
Travis.
Spring, summer, and golf
Good
season.
Luck, everybody. Keep swinging.